BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is Delia Smith, arguably the most successful food writer and broadcaster the country has ever produced. With more than 21 million books sold in the UK and a TV career spanning 4 decades, she's earned a very special place in British kitchens and popular culture. So great is her influence that Delia was added to the dictionary. The Delia effect caused a run on everything from omelette pans to cranberries, and the late Queen, rumoured to be a reader, made her a companion of honour. She even has a place in rock and roll history as the baker behind the colourful cake on the cover of the Rolling Stones' Let It Bleed. Not bad for someone who left school at 16 without any qualifications. What's more, she did it all without raising her voice. Not for her the theatrics and tantrums of the TV chefs who followed in her footsteps. She quite simply dreamed of teaching the nation to cook and then did it, with reliable recipes and constant encouragement. These days, you're just as likely to find her in the stands as by the stove, pursuing her other great passion, football. She and her husband of 52 years have been majority shareholders of her beloved Norwich FC since 1996. She says, "I was never a great cook, not one who was making people gasp at what I was doing. I just wanted other people to be able to do it too, so I went the extra mile to make sure they could." Delia Smith, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Hello.
So let's start, Delia, with that desire to share what you know, to teach, because I think that runs very deep in you. Where do you think it comes from?
I don't know, but it's an instinct. And what I had in the back of my mind was to take the fear away. I think people are afraid to cook. And I myself found reading cookery books, there was always something that they didn't say or I wasn't sure about. So I just wanted, in order to take the fear away, to make everything really, really explicit and infallible. And why should you be able to cook if no one's ever shown you? Mm-hmm. How strange that people are expected to just leave school or go to university and then suddenly start cooking. It's ridiculous. You need to be taught. It's like giving people the keys to a car and saying, off you go, drive the car.
You've created hundreds of recipes, and I know people come up to you all the time to thank you for them. I mean, it literally happened on the way to the studio today. What do people talk about the most?
It is definitely Christmas. And you're right, today one lady said she always makes the pudding, another one said in the lift she always makes the mincemeat. And it does bring it sort of right up to the surface at Christmas.
Delia, very few people visit the island twice, but this is your second time as a castaway, and a lot has happened since your first conversation with Roy Plumley, 1982. How have you approached choosing your music this time?
Quite differently. I think this time it's about things that have lasted, you know, things that have made such an impression on me that they're always going to be there.
Well, with that in mind, let's start with disc number one. What's it going to be?
The wonderful, amazing Paul Simon. When I was learning to cook, I worked in a restaurant, and every night when I was clearing up after all the guests had gone, I used to put Paul Simon songbook. It's one of my favourite albums. And then I used to go off to a little folk club, because you can't go to bed when you've been in a busy restaurant. I used to go to a little folk club in Wardour Street called Les Cousins, and they had different guests there, and sometimes at one stage they had Paul Simon. I didn't see him, but he's been with me all my life, Paul Simon. I love him.
And why have you chosen this track in particular?
Silence means a lot to me. It's a very important part of my life. But also just him, his beautiful voice and the acoustic guitar. I still love it.
Narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp, I turn my collar to the cold and damp. when my eyes were stabbed by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence.
Paul Simon and the Sound of Silence. So, Delia Smith, let's go back to the beginning. You were born to Etty and Harold in 1941 and brought up in Bexley Heath, southeast London. What do you remember about your early childhood?
Well, it was wonderful. We lived next door to my grandparents. After the war, my parents lived in my grandparents' house, and then the house became available next door and we were able to, later on, to buy it. So I was brought up most of my childhood living next door to my grandparents, and apart from my father, they had three daughters as well. So it was quite a good family thing and very, very happy memories.
You have a brother, I think you were 8 when he came along?
Yes.
Did you enjoy being a big sister?
My parents said, "What do you want for Christmas?" And I always said, "A baby brother, please." And so I got my baby brother. But he was quite independent, so if I took him off shopping or something like that, he wouldn't hold my hand or... But I did watch him being brought up. My mother taught me a lot about bringing up babies. And considering I don't have any children, I know quite a lot because she taught me.
So tell me about the food that you were brought up on, Delia. You were born so during rationing then,
yes.
In a really time of economy and frugality. Yeah. Was that the attitude at home?
Yes, it was, because nobody had any choice. Everybody's sweet ration was 2 ounces a week. Can you imagine the health of our nation now if that was still going? My mother was a great cook, both my grandmothers were, and we couldn't afford to have holidays abroad or things like that, but we had wonderful food.
So everything made from scratch?
Yeah.
So it was your mother and grandmother who taught you to cook, and your mum happily lived to see your success. She was often pictured with you at Norwich Football Club, lived to be 100. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your relationship. How would you describe it with your mum?
She was very strict, mm-hmm. and she was my fiercest critic. So I think I owe her a lot in all the success I had. My feet were kept very firmly on the ground. And so I never had a chance to get big-headed.
But I wonder what she was proudest of, because, you know, your legacy obviously goes beyond your success and the numbers and the sales and all that kind of thing. It's also about connecting with people and community, and obviously everything you've done at the football club speaks to that as well.
Yeah. And if I could have anything I wanted, I would want her ability to sort of attract people. She attracted people like bees around a honeypot, and all the players really loved her. And she'd walk down Carrow Road and she would bump into a player and say, "You were rubbish today."
And how did they take it?
And the player just burst out laughing. And then when she died, they all collected and bought me a tree with yellow flowers on it and a plaque. To say, you know, from the footballers in the class of whatever year it was.
Oh, yeah. How wonderful.
Great lady.
It's time for some more music, Delia. Your second disc today. What's it going to be and why have you chosen it?
One of the things I look back on and so grateful for, that I was young at the time of the Beatles. I loved their music, but they had more than music to offer. A lot of their songs were poems, and they were about life and about wisdom, and the culmination of their whole contribution is in the Sgt. Pepper album. It's just the greatest album ever. And Within You, Without You was combining two continents together with different music so cleverly. And the words, I think, if you write the words out, which I've done, you don't need any other lessons in life. I was cooking for somebody. I was doing one of their dinner parties and I was in their kitchen up high, and in a roof outside the kitchen, there was another flat, and I could hear this music and thinking, what is that? It's fantastic. And that was the first time I heard it.
We were talking.
The Beatles and Within You, Without You. Delia, your father Harold didn't see you until you were 3 when he was demobbed and returned home from the war. Do you remember him coming back?
I do. I remember going into my mother's bedroom and wondering why one of Grandad's cufflinks was on the floor. And that's not Grandad. And it was happening all up and down the street where I lived. There were people being demobbed and coming back home. And so it was very happy time.
What did he do for a living, your dad?
Well, he was actually a buyer of tools in a big department store in London called Gammages. And then he went into partnership with somebody locally and they did a tool shop together.
Your mum and dad didn't stay together. They divorced when you were 15. It must have been very tough for you. What kind of impact did it have?
Well, I would like to say that don't anyone ever think that that isn't going to affect the children. People say, oh, children bounce back, they're all right. They don't. It's a terrible, terrible thing to happen to a child. Mm. And I found it terrible. You feel rejected by a parent. You go through a long time when you don't want to have anything to do with them at all. Mm. But then that does calm down. Mm. And then later on, you know, it was fine.
So you were able to maintain the relationship with your dad, but
yes,
tough. And what about your mum? How did she manage after the divorce?
Well, heartbroken. You can't really describe it in any other way. Mm. And I remember the most painful time at all was packing up all the things in our house. We were packing them. It was, yeah, not very nice.
So I'm wondering about those difficult years afterwards and how that shaped your attitude as you grew into adulthood, watching your mum have to pull everything together and kind of start again for the family.
She was amazing. And she became a personnel officer, which is quite right because she was definitely a people person.
It's time for your third disc, Delia. What are we going to hear next?
One of the things about the desert island is you're only allowed to have a bit of something. So I've gone for this one, which is Sarté, because I think it has such a lovely depth to it. It's just this wonderful piano, so gentle, but there's something really lovely and beautiful and deep.
Nottier No. 1 by Eric Satie, played by Alexandra Thoreau. Delia Smith, people might be surprised to hear that you left school at 16 without any qualifications, but what do you put that down to, looking back?
I can't really put my finger on it. I just don't know. I did enjoy some school. I enjoyed music lessons and I enjoyed literature and English.
What about cookery? Presumably you shone there.
There was cookery lessons then. I think that was the only A I ever got.
Do you remember what you made?
No, but I remember disasters.
We'll take a disaster. It'll make anyone listening to this who's just had
right.
one feel
well,
better.
We were supposed to make Yorkshire pudding and my Yorkshire pudding at the bottom was like a blancmange. And I took it home and the dog wouldn't eat it.
So. Oh, wow. Luckily for you, Delia, when you left school at that time, there was a lot of work around. So you were able to try several different things. You were a hairdressing apprentice. You worked at a travel agent, went to secretarial college. Nothing quite seemed to gel for a while. It took a while for anything to stick. I wonder what your mother's thoughts were at the time. Was she worried about you at any point? Were you?
Yes, my mother was very worried. And she said to all her friends and all the rest of the family, please don't ask me what Delia's doing. I haven't a clue what she's doing next.
Your career started at a French restaurant in London called mm-hmm. The Singing Chef. You mm-hmm. went back so often and asked so many questions that the chef offered you a job. What did you love about it?
He said, yeah, we need a dishwasher on Saturday nights. And I did suddenly realise that, you know, I'd been brought up on really good English cooking, but being in a French restaurant and having all these different things, I thought it was really glamorous, you know, and I wanted to learn how to do it. So I went to be a washer-up, and then I graduated to be a chopper-up. And the chef actually really did teach me quite a lot. And I did some waitressing too, and I think that's where my career came from, was going out into the restaurant and serving people and understanding how little they knew.
So, Delia, how quickly did you progress after starting out as a pot washer and making it to waitress?
There was, round the corner from the restaurant, there was a big photographic studio, and I had friends who worked in the fashion photography there. And I went and helped a little bit on that because the restaurant was in the evening, so I was able to do all kinds of other things in the daytime. And they had someone called a home economist who came in and cooked the food, and then they photographed it. And I said, I'd like to do that. So he said, well, come and have a go one day. And I did. And and that just blew up into me being, for about 3 years, I was doing food photography in the daytime and restaurant in the evening.
We'll find out what happened next after your next record, if you wouldn't mind. Disc number 4. What have you got for us, Delia Smith?
Ah, they're all special, but this is incredibly special, this wonderful voice of Pavarotti. It comes across so powerfully and so beautifully, the anguish and the pain of loss. I can't really ever listen to it without feeling a few goosebumps.
Luciano Pavarotti singing Caruso with the Bologna Opera House Orchestra. Delia Smith, after starting out at The Singing Chef, you started working as a home economist and what we would now, I think, call a food stylist, so ads and photo shoots. And one early commission was to make a gaudy cake for what turned out to be the cover of the Rolling Stones album Let It Bleed. How did it happen?
In such an ordinary way. Just a phone call from a photographer. Delia, are you free on Thursday? Can I book you? Yes, that's my daily work. That's what I do. What is it you want? Well, I want a gaudy cake. It's got to look really sort of, you know, horrible.
So that was the direction. So it's pink, it's green, it's white, there's tons of icing.
Yeah. And that was all he said.
So how did you find out?
I think Keith Richard arrived.
It was a big clue.
Big clue. It's like sometimes you feel like a spectator on your life. Mm. You know, you think, how did that happen? And there it was, and it's still there. I get albums sent to me to sign.
I love that. So in 1969, you got the job of writing a cookery column for the newly launched Daily Mirror Colour magazine. What sort of recipes would you have been creating for that publication back then?
I remember my first cookery column, and I think it was kipper pate, beef braised in beer, and it was 5-minute cheesecake.
Mm. 1969 was a pivotal year for you, Delia. You also met your husband, Michael Wynne Jones. He was then the deputy editor of the Mirror magazine.
I used to deliver my handwritten copy, and Michael used to put it into English.
So was it love at first sight for the pair of you?
No, I don't think so. But I mean, it was obviously, he liked food a lot and I liked food a lot. And that was something that drew us together.
Michael also introduced you to football, I think.
Yes.
Which has been another great passion in your life. And yeah, the two of you have been shareholders since 1996 in Norwich City FC, investing heavily over the years. Mm-hmm. I know the club's about so much more than scores and a balance sheet for you. What do you get back from your involvement? What does it mean to you?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's a beautiful game. So it is a beautiful game. It's irritating, it's disappointing, you have pain, you have ecstasy. It's all those things. But I think one of the things that's so good about it now in this day and age is its community. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the few places where community really does thrive.
You're a passionate fan, Delia, and the passion went viral in 2005 when you urged fans to get behind the team who were losing to Man City. I believe the phrase you used was, let's be Avenue.
Yeah.
Tell me about that moment.
Well, I was trying to get somebody to put it on the message board. Come on, you know, where are you? Because they were like church mice and we were losing. And somebody just gave me the microphone and said, say it. And I forgot, Lauren, I just forgot that Sky were there. Because you don't know they're there. You know what I mean? There's always cameras anyway. And that's what happened.
And the moment went viral because people connected with your passion as a fan.
Yeah. I had letters from football supporters from one end of the country to the other. It was wonderful. The first week wasn't. The first week, there were people in the press saying I should be brought before a disciplinary committee at the FA.
Do people still come up and say it to you?
Still. I go to away matches and they all call out, let's be having you, Delia. It's lovely. I love it.
Delia, you and Michael have put so much into the club, so much passion and time and money. I mean, would you ever consider selling it? There aren't many clubs that are owned by individuals who we can name and call to.
Well, the answer to that is no, but we do now have an equal shareholder, a lovely man from America. And so when it comes time for us to stand down, hopefully he's going to be the one that's going to take it over.
And when will that time be? I know your heart is still with Norwich City.
I know that one thing's for sure, that souls don't have ages. So I'm still 19, but the body does. And there might come a time when we can't do it anymore. But at the moment, that time hasn't yet come. I mean, we may not be board directors, but we'll still be going to football with our Zimmer frames, I think.
It's time for your next piece of music, Delia Smith. Disc number 5. What are we going to hear?
This is very special. It's a man called David Fanshawe, who sadly is no longer with us, who went to Africa and did an album called The African Sanctus, where he just took a microphone around to all different tribes, different churches. And the album was meant to be about peace in the world. And it means so much to me because Michael also was there with him in Khartoum writing an article for the Radio Times. And so he was there while he was doing some of this. This particular piece of music, he went up to the top of the mosque outside Cairo, recorded the call to prayer, then went back and with the help of, I think it's the singers of St George's Chapel at Windsor, recorded the Kyrie from the Mass. He put them on the album, both together. And there's something much deeper than religion going on. It's revealing how people are connected. And they're connected by their communal longing for peace. And that is deeper than any kind of religion. So when I'm on the desert island, I'm going to be reminded that that is the truth.
Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar.
Kyrie, call to prayer from African Sanctus by David Fanshawe, performed by the Muezzin from the Muhammad Ali Mosque, Cairo, Bournemouth Symphony Chorus and the choristers of St George's Chapel, Windsor. Delia, you presented many decades worth of hugely successful TV programmes and they brought so much pleasure to so many and shaped the way that the country cooks. Your ambition was to teach us how to cook and you did it. The Delia effect was such that shops would regularly run out of ingredients included in your recipes, whether it was cranberries, limes or anything else. Did you enjoy making TV programmes?
They were quite challenging and quite difficult to do. I had a lot of critics. An awful lot of critics. You know, I was boring and, you know, I was like a Volvo car, reliable but not very exciting. And people only watched my programmes if they really wanted to know how to cook. And luckily for me, a lot of people did want to know how to cook. So,
is it a little bit satisfying that some of the bright young things who were throwing around those insults haven't stood the test of time quite so well as you have?
I wouldn't say that, but it's the people. They're the ones that choose. They're the ones that come back for more. There was this relationship that was really good.
So you always felt that. Did you draw strength from it?
Yes, I still do. Mm. I mean, I still have lots of friends that I don't know, if you can understand that. And it's lovely.
Time for your next piece of music, Delia Smith, disc number 6. And I think this might be someone that you've cooked with in the past, or at least I've seen you share a meal with her.
Yeah, like I have a passion for Paul Simon. I have a passion for Kate Bush. I just love her. I love her music. To me, her music is like abstract art, and it just goes on and on. You still get something different when you listen to it.
And I saw the two of you having a chat about vegetarian food over a nut roast and a rather delicious-looking Waldorf salad.
That was my first cookery course series on television, and she just was sensational then with her first record. And I thought, well, let's get a vegetarian that everybody loves on the programme. And I was invited to her house, and yeah, it was amazing. She gave me one of her recipes, which is still in the cookery course.
And why have you chosen this track in particular, Dylan?
I've chosen this woman's work, not because of the lyrics, but just the whole range of it.
Kate Bush and This Woman's Work. Delia, you started the now well-established tradition of TV cooks writing Christmas books. You've written 2. Do you still refer to them at this time of year?
Yes,
in your house?
I have to follow it myself because I can't remember anything. And I must say it's very useful. Christmas Eve, yeah, do this then and then do that.
And it must be special to you that you're part of people's Christmas. I mean, every year they must, like, as you said, this is the time of year that people say, oh, I'm just about to make your trifle.
It is, it's incredible.
And amazing that initially the BBC apparently weren't keen on the idea of a Christmas
book. They didn't want to do a Christmas.
Why not?
Oh, because they didn't think it would sell. I think the publishers felt, oh, well, they didn't want to publish a book that was only going to sell in December. And I think the TV was the same, you know, it wasn't going to be. And then it sort of, like, exploded.
Your first Christmas book is dedicated to your mother. You say thanks for all the lovely Christmases. Yeah. I wonder what Christmas means to you now.
I still think it's brilliant. I know there's lots of criticisms about the commercial thing, but it's a people thing. It's people coming together and people travelling across the country to see their friends and their relatives. And I just think this whole idea of people having a celebration and eating too much and drinking too much, that's what life's about.
And you mentioned, you know, the dishes that take you back to your mother and your grandmother's cooking. I wonder, are there any that you always want to have on your Christmas table that you always make?
Both my Christmas cake, the traditional Christmas cake, and the pudding are both a combination of my grandmother and my mother's recipes.
Now, in your book, you mentioned the kind of timetable, the lists. In your book, you've got a very precise Christmas Day cooking timetable, including the suggestion to have a pre-lunch glass of champagne at 1:30.
Yeah, everybody loves that.
Just after you've turned the chipolatas and the bacon rolls over. Now, at this stage of the proceedings, what's your best tip for any home cooks listening to help them get through the day without a disaster?
Well, if they're following the plan and following the recipe, it won't let them down. And just keep thinking of the, when it's all over, you can put your feet up, you know.
Hold
it is difficult. I wouldn't pretend it isn't difficult. It is difficult to get it all done, but it is wonderful.
It's time for some more music, Delia Smith. Disc number 7. What are we going to hear?
It's the just incredible voice of Sinead O'Connor. And I have great admiration for her, for what she is, what she stood for. And she's a special person, and I'm sorry she's not with us anymore, but thank goodness we've got all her music. And this is the track, He Moved Through the Fair.
He went away from me. wedding day.
Sinead O'Connor and He Moved Through the Fair. Delia Smith, you began your cookery career with a sincere wish to teach people how to cook, and you were made a Companion of Honour for your services to cookery and cookery education in 2017. What does that award mean to you?
Oh, wow. It was incredible. Absolutely. So completely unexpected, and I still can't quite believe it. The most special thing was after I'd received the award, Michael and I were invited to Windsor Castle to have dinner with the Queen and stay the night.
Tell me what was on the menu.
The food was brilliant. And there were about 20 people altogether. But it was very, very, very special.
I wonder if the Windsor Castle kitchen crew feel any pressure when cooking for you.
They told me so. They did tell me so. But that's not what I'm about at all, because I only ever did anything everyone can do.
I wonder about, you know, reflecting back as we have been today, for the little girl who was told she, you know, she couldn't sit still at school, and what we're going to do with her, and your mum who's, don't ask me what Delia's doing, you know, you've achieved everything that you have.
Yes.
How does it feel reflecting on that and thinking about it?
I feel very privileged, incredibly privileged. And nothing I've done alone. I've had my husband, I've had my wonderful agent, and a whole team of people, and all the people who worked with me and supported me. I couldn't have done anything without all of them.
We're about to cast you away to the desert island, Delia. Will you be able to fend for yourself when you're there?
I'm not sure. If there's plenty of fruit to pick off the trees, but I'm not going to be creative in making things, no. Okay. Tools and things, no.
Last time you were cast away, you told Roy Plumley that you wouldn't try and escape because you'd be too scared of the water and the sea.
Yeah, I would be, yes.
Still the same answer.
I'd wait for somebody to come and get me, yeah.
Before we send you off to your desert island then, Delia Smith, what's your last choice today?
Well, I'm very lucky, and you've reminded me of how lucky I've been and what a lovely life I've had. And I've always been happy. And I love Pharrell Williams. He's one of my current favourites. So therefore, still loving pop music, a contemporary pop singer now, is Pharrell Williams singing my favourite Pharrell Williams, which is Happy.
Pharrell Williams and Happy. So, Delia Smith, the time has come. Again, I'm going to send you away to the desert island. I will give you the books, the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare to keep you company. You can take one more of your own choice. What would you like?
If I was on a desert island, I can't think of anything nicer than reading scriptures and Shakespeare. So I'm going to read scriptures and Shakespeare because I'd love to read more. So what I'm going to choose as a book is a book of art. I've got a book at home which is Sister Wendy's 100 Best Paintings, starting from the 6th century and coming right the way through. So I would be able to look at art all the way through those years.
Wonderful Sister Wendy, who herself is in our Desert Island Discs archive,
yes.
And I think was a friend of yours.
Yes, she was, yes.
How did you get to know each other?
A long story. I was asked if I would mind taking her to hospital for treatment in Cambridge, and I started just by giving her a lift, driving her there and taking her back again, and we became friends. I learned an awful lot from knowing her, but I've also got most of her books, so I continue to learn things from her. And one beautiful thing she wrote once was that peace is a better word than happiness, because if you're at peace, then you're obviously happy.
Sister Wendy's 100 Best Loved Paintings is yours. And what would you like as your luxury item?
Well, I'm not sure I can have it, but
okay.
You mentioned people. Well, if I could have as much of the archive as possible of Desert Island Discs, then I'll have all the people around me.
It's sneaky, it's cheeky, but there is precedent for this. I remember very well that it's been granted before.
Has it?
on that basis, yes, David Mitchell took it for one.
Right.
As a testament to humanity. And
yes.
Seeing as it's Christmas, it's yours.
And that's what it is, a testament to humanity.
Finally, which one track of the eight that you've shared with us today would you save from the waves if you had to?
Oh, I'll go for African Sanctus.
Delia Smith, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs, and have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Thank you so much. Same to you.
Hello. It was lovely chatting to Delia, and I do hope she's happy on the island with all those former castaways for company. There are more than 2,000 programmes in our archive, which you can listen to. We've cast away many cooks and chefs over the years, including Delia's first visit to the island with Roy Plumley. Nigella Lawson is in there, and Jamie Oliver too. You can find all of those programmes if you search through BBC Sounds or on our own Desert Island Discs website. And you'll also find Keith Richards' fantastic Desert Island Discs too. The studio manager for today's programme was Emma Hart. The assistant producer was Christine Pavlovsky. The production coordinator was Susie Roylance. And the producer was Sarah Taylor. Thanks for listening to our podcast this year. And I wish you a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from all of us on Desert Island Discs.
Hello, this is Marion Keyes.
And this is Tara Flynn.
We host a podcast you might like for BBC Radio 4 and BBC Sounds called Now You're Asking.
Each week we take real listeners' questions about life,
love,
lingerie,
cats,
dogs,
dentists,
pockets,
or the lack of
anything really,
and apply our worldly wisdom in a way which we hope will help,
but also hopefully entertain. Join us, why don't you?
Search up Now You're Asking
on BBC Sounds.
Tankin' you.